Okay, so the first talk is about Rory McCann and crossing Dublin without passing a pub. That sounds like quite interesting. So you have 4 minutes, please. The slides?
Ah, yeah. Okay. Hello. Okay.
Do you have a slide?
Oh, yes, slides. Can I make this big? No, that doesn't work. Presentation. Okay. Hello. My name is Rory McCann. I'm talking to you about crossing Dublin without passing a pub. Yes, I'm Irish. Yes, this is a thing about pubs. Go figure. Next. Great. Okay. So, yes, pubs, Ireland, yada, yada, yada. Ireland also has a lot of literary people, so and authors and things like that. And the actual problem for this, it's not just me being crazy, is from Irish author James Joyce. He wrote Ulysses, a book about 100 years ago. It's a modernist book, and it's set in Dublin 100 years ago. And in one part, he muses, a good puzzle would be to cross Dublin without passing a pub. And that's Bloomsday is coming up soon, and that's when they... Oh, here we go, yes. They walk around Dublin dressed like that. Now, this is the kind of problem that's great for OSM because it's all, it's routing, and, you know, you need the actual data to do it yourself. Yeah, that Bloomsday, next. So, crossing Dublin without passing a pub, there's a few iffy definitions. How do you cross Dublin? How do you pass a pub? So to cross Dublin, there's kind of two canals. You can see them around the edge. And so I just said, right, if you can get from one to the other, that's crossing Dublin. Pub, easy enough. Amenity equals pub. Now, that obviously doesn't include off-licenses or restaurants that serve wine or beer or breweries or anything like that. But I think it's mostly a, you know, go into the place, can you get a pint? So I solved it easy enough by just brute forcing it, basically. There's been a lot of fancy talks about routing engines and all this, and nah, this was just download the XML, just depth first search, and it's fine. And so I, you know, obviously OSM, how do you pass something because it's not really connected up that way with roads, so I just took a simple solution of drawing a border around each pub, and if you get, you try not to get within that, and then, you know, it's one of those problems where you just need to sort of prove a negative, you know, if you can find a counterexample. And all the code is up there. My absolutely beautiful, not hacky, dodgy code is on GitHub if you want to run it yourself for other people, for other things. So this is Dublin. These are the pubs. This is where you have to not walk within. And you can roughly see where the centre is, where there's loads and loads of pubs. That's Temple Bar. Don't go there. And that's when we draw the circles. These are our danger zones. And as you can see, if you get in close to... you can see basically how some of the roads, you basically can't walk on them. So what I did is I got all the roads in Dublin, take away all of them that are not... don't pass by a pub, and so these are the ones you can walk on. As you can see, there's lots that you can't walk on. So yes, brute force, do it nice and simple. You need to do it once, and there we go, that's the solution. Yes, you can walk across Dublin without passing a pub, and it goes that way. And it goes close enough to, doesn't go close enough to any of them. But, I wonder, can I go back? Guinness Brewery, where they make all the Guinness, is it's kind of in the middle there, and it does technically walk just along the edge road beside it, but people say, oh, that shouldn't be allowed, but you can't really go in and get a pint, so it doesn't count. And of course, the real original Irish solution is just go into it, you're not passing it. Oh, thank you, that's me, that's the source code, that's the website.
Hello? Geht es jetzt? Okay. Thanks, Rory. Great talk. I got a hint. Of course, we don't need to limit the Latin talks to 4 minutes because the other speaker didn't appear. The next one is Sven Jonas Schellhorn. Is he available? No? Okay, then Tim Waters. Okay, next one. So I think you can grab about 5 minutes or
something. Okay, right. It was only 6 slides, so. So hello, my name's Tim Waters, also known as Chippy. I'm talking about openhistoricalmap.org. It is a map of everything that has ever existed. This is the project. It's only a small thing to do. It's also putting a time slider on the world. What types of things are inside that you can store within Open Historical Map? You can have prehistoric objects, ancient things, so things from Rome or ancient Greece, modern history, I say modern history, but these are buildings from 1853 in New York City, in Manhattan. So this is sort of the lower end. I think, yeah, there's the Stock Exchange, I think, is listed on there. You can see there's a primary school where now there's big high-rise buildings and things. It also has things from yesterday. So even though we have things from ancient times, it also has things that used to be in OpenStreetMap. Here we have two maps of the Burning Man Festival in, I think it's Nevada or California in the States. You can see they're overlaid each other. OpenStreetMap's not the best place for this, but Open Historical Map is a good place for it. These places no longer exist, but there was a town. But it used to exist. And although they're both overlaid here, on the website openhistoricalmap.org, they are split into two different styles that show each year, which is possible to do. How do you get your data in? We saw in the case of the New York buildings, this is data from the New York Public Library that people basically digitized. And they digitized from their collection of historical maps. This is a warper that uses Wikimedia Commons historical maps. And we're going to tie into this system so you can upload your historical map there and trace over it. You can see here on the right, we have a number of layers. One's the historical layer, which is everything all together, mashed together, which looks a bit silly, as we saw with the Burning Man. We show a little standard OpenStreetMap one, and also two layers currently. So currently, we've got the tools that can make a tile set between any two date ranges. So we've altered the some of the stack so that we can import OpenStreetMap style data and time enable it, essentially. But of course, we can't do this for every possible time period, because otherwise there won't be any space left on a disk drive. So the next stage is to essentially make it much easier to make any map for any time period you want. And that is it. So hopefully at the hack day, if anyone's here and wants to hack on some historical things, give us a shout. And that's it. Thank you.
Okay, thanks a bunch, Tim. The next one is Serge, and the last name I don't know how to pronounce. I'm sorry.
Did you find your slides?
Yeah, I just have to... There it is.
No need to hurry.
Yeah. So I'm going to talk a little bit about change set discussions, which is a feature that the OpenStreetMap community has wanted for a long time, and it's real, it's now, and it's happening. So the problem we have in OpenStreetMap is that we have lots of limited channels of communication. If you want to talk to a larger audience, we have to use a mailing list or a forum, or maybe for some communities it's Facebook, etc. And if you want to talk directly to another user, you have to use direct messaging through OSM or email, and neither of those are public. Which makes it really hard to have focused discussions about particular change sets or particular edits. It just doesn't work well right now. So because of that, we just don't have good, robust discussions about individual edits. There's a typo, but there's no public record of the conversation when we do. And then our onboarding experience isn't as good as it could be. New users don't get the corrections they need, and even older users don't get the accolades they deserve. Bad edits get reverted, or they just stay around forever, and it's just not good. So the solution is to tie discussions directly against change sets and have those discussions on OSM and allow everyone to just participate. So thanks to Google Summer of Code, Frederick Rahm and I both, in the past, Frederick Rahm and I both began implementing this, but neither of us at the time, but because of GSOC, Google Summer of Code, we were able to put up a proposal and a student came forward and is working with us. I'm working with Lukasz Gurdek, and I'm sorry if I mispronounce his name, out of Poland, and he's not the most experienced OSM user, but he is an OSM user and he's working on this, and we've got a working demo. If you go to, and I'll give you the URL later, you can't see very well, but on the side there, you have a whole set of little comments associated with the discussion, which is connected with this change set. So change set and discussion right there on the left, just like notes looks. So if you want to try this out, it's a purely demo server. This is not real data, but if you go to comments APIs dev openstreetmap.org, which is a little different than the URL there. You can see our existing change set discussions, create them, get notified, You can watch a change set. You can unsubscribe. So if you started watching one and then didn't want to, you can get an RSS feed of all the discussions, et cetera. So it's all working right now. We don't yet have an API. It's all via the website, but we're working on that. And the other thing we'd like to do by the end of the summer is have a simple, you know, thanks functionality where if somebody makes a really good edit, you don't even have to make a discussion. You just press a button and they get some kind of accolade. So, we hope that this leads to more local discussions, more localized discussions that are happening in the public eye, and that makes more collaboration and, a better platform for the best map in the world, which is, of course, OpenStreetMap. So thanks to Google Summer of Code, and thank you, Lukasz Gurdek, for your work. And that's it.
Thanks a bunch, Serge. The next is Richard Fairhurst about rooting for cyclists or the slings and arrows of outrageous bike routes.
Okay. How do we go full screen on this one?
Do your slides?
Yeah. Okay. How do I go full screen?
No, shift F5.
Yeah.
Okay. And then go view, I think, right?
View.
Presentation.
Presentation.
Okay. No need to hide.
Excellent. Thank you. Hi, I'm Richard Fairhurst, and I'm going to be talking about bike routes and how you find your way from A to B on a bike using OpenStreetMap. And often, a good way to get from A to B on a bike is if someone has built a cycle path between A and B. Unfortunately, not all cycle paths are created equal, and not all of them are created any good whatsoever. As you can see, this cycle path is directing you straight into the nearest toilet. This is another example of a cycle path, which is possibly not quite as great as it should be. This is going along the road in Britain, the side of the road. Unfortunately, they have decided that it would be a good idea to get cyclists to stop and get off every single time a driveway crosses the cycle path. I think you've got 7 in about 200 metres there. So, again, possibly not the best thing. So, what do we do in these circumstances? What we do is we ask a website to give us the best way from A to B. And what website do we use? Of course, we use Google Maps. Now, this is what happens if you ask Google Maps for a route from A to B. This particular A to B I've chosen is from Land's End to Bristol in southwest England. Now, this is actually quite an important route because it's the start of the Land's End to John O'Groats route, which is if you're cycling from one end of Britain to another. That is important. It's a big challenge for a lot of people. You ask Google, this is in Google's bike mode, bear that in mind, and it sends you up a road called the A30. Now, the A30 is sort of pretty much renowned as the most dangerous road in the whole of this part of Britain. It's a great big fast dual carriageway. It is the last place I would ever choose to cycle upon. There's quite a decent road that runs alongside it that you could possibly go on. Unfortunately, I can't really point that out to you because Google's cartography these days shows roads as white on a white background, so it's not quite so easy to see. But I take all of this very seriously. I'm very interested in getting better bike routes. I'm a volunteer for Sustrans, which is the cycle route charity in Britain, and I've done bits and bobs for bike routes in Britain. This is a cycle route I designed, which opened about a month ago. You can see in the top picture, that's me at the right making my opening speech. The guy on the left is the VIP who was opening it. I'm telling him, no, I'm not quite telling him what I think of him because that would take too long, but he's fairly well-known bloke. Anyway, so what do? We use something that uses OpenStreetMap data because we'll get better results than Google. And there's been, for several years now, there's been a superb website in Britain called cyclestreets.net, and it's really, really good. It solves the A to B problem. You can give it an A and a B anywhere in Britain, and it will find not just one, three lovely bike routes between the two places. That's an example. That's giving it the same same challenge from Land's End to Bristol, and it doesn't route you up the A30, which is much better. But I was building a website which has got a lot of rich content about cycle routes. It's got guides to particular routes. It's got guides to cities, so on and so forth. I wanted something that I could integrate really, really deeply into that, a route planning solution. And I also wanted something that has, you know, all the nice conveniences of Google Maps, like via points, draggable ways, all of that. So I thought, well, there's a good solution for that. It's called OSRM, which is the open source routing machine developed by Dennis Luxon. He did a talk on it yesterday, and it's brilliant. So this is what I built. Cycle.travel, it's a bike routing site for the UK, and it uses OSRM. Now, to get a better bike route, you've got to do a lot of thinking about OpenStreetMap data, do what you can to manage all of this data into something that will give you a good route. So you've got to choose bike lanes, but you don't want to trust that too much because this is what is laughably called a cycle superhighway in London. As you can tell, it really is super. That's a really safe place to cycle. So if anyone tells you that Boris Johnson's doing good things for cyclists, this is the sort of thing he's doing. It's important not to go up hills if you don't have to, because cycling up a hill when you could go along a nice valley is a pain in the legs. Open source routing machine OSRM out of the box doesn't have elevation support, but you can patch it in, and that's what I've done. And there's a load of other factors you want to take into account. So surfaces, whether it's part of a bike route, you don't want it to be too wiggly going left, right, left, right. And you want it to follow quiet roads and not the A30. So that's a bit of example code that I've used. You'll see if there's a max speed set, it's over 90 kilometres per hour, it's a trunk road, it's one way, it's probably a fast dual carriageway. So let's classify that as evil because we really don't want to go along there. But you can't be too dogmatic about that. Sometimes you do actually want to put up with 20, 30 metres of a bad route because it would save you a 5-mile detour. There is good precedent for this. Some of you might recognise this from about 10, 15 years ago in the Tour de France. There was a crash at about the start of that dotted line there. Lance Armstrong, following behind, has two alternatives. Either he goes into the back of the bloke who's just crashed in front of him, or he takes a shortcut. He chooses to take the shortcut. You can see at the bottom of the arrow, there's a little guy in a yellow jersey. That is Lance Armstrong. I'm not encouraging you to follow Lance Armstrong's example for all sorts of reasons. So, how do you do this? What you do is you sift a lot of stuff from OpenStreetMap tags. Tags are a pain in the neck when it comes to paths because there are so many different ways, including our favourite tag up there, smoothness equals very horrible. And there's all manner of these things you have to work through. My absolute bugbear is highway equals path and nothing else. Sometimes you will just see highway equals path. What does that mean? Well, it might mean that on the left, that is a path. It might mean that on the right, that is also a path. You want to route your cycle route along the right, you don't want to do it on the one left for fairly obvious reasons. So I have to do a whole load of assumptions, post-processing, pre-processing, anything you can name. Actually, the solution I've come up with this one is to see whether it's in a set of polygons representing built-up areas. If it just says highway equals path and it's in a built-up area, it's more likely to be what you see on the right. If it's in the countryside, it's more likely to be on the left. It's an assumption, but if that's the only data we've got, that's all we can do. So please do that. Please tag surface if you know it. Thank you very much. I'll show you a brief demo. Live demos don't work, and they especially don't work when you are not familiar with this, but I shall have a go. Where is the Y? Good. I do usually type a bit faster than this. Where is the slash? Shift 7, obviously. So let's ask for a route. I know where the Y is now, that's good. From Heyon Y to Shrewsbury, nice places in Britain. And lo and behold, it's found a route. And this is interesting, it shows you a couple of things about the route. It's not just a straight route, it's heading east before it heads north, because that gets you to this particular place somewhere around here where there is a lovely path through the hills. You'll see the cycle routes, National Cycle Network routes, which are dotted lines there. It's not following them unthinkingly because they are lovely, but they go up a bunch of hills. And we're trying to do things to make the presentation as appealing to cyclists as we possibly can. So you'll see it tells you the villages that you go through, which is important when you're finding your way. And this is quite fun, that what you can actually do is look at photos to see where you're cycling. This comes from Geograph, which is a crowdsourced photo site for Britain. So who needs Google Street View? All right, so let's go back to this. View. Okay, F5. Live demos never work. So thank you very much to Dennis Luxon, who wrote OSRM, which sounds a bit like awesome and is awesome. Thank you very much to Emil Tin from iBike Copenhagen, who put route relation support into it, which is important for what I do. You can use cycle.travel now to find routes and look at maps in Britain. This week I've added maps for the whole of Western Europe, so you can browse around and find them. And within the next couple of weeks, you'll be able to find cycle routes, plan routes across Western Europe as well. I'm Richard, that's my contact details. After 10 years of doing OpenStreetMap for fun, I now do it as a freelance consultant. So if you want to talk about anything to do with routing or OpenStreetMap, come and find me. Thank you very much.
Okay, thanks, Richard. The next is Christoph Winter about Projecker.
Patrick, where did you put it? This one, okay. Okay. Wieso lädt das nicht richtig? Kann ich das nochmal kopieren? Das hätte ich vorhin. Ja, irgendwas. Okay, jetzt. Das sieht besser aus, ja. Ah. Ah, okay. Hat bloß zu lange gedauert. Das ist hier, ne? Mhm. Okay.
Das ist schon Fullscreen 5?
Ja. Was nicht?
Nö.
F11.
Ne, ist immer noch nicht.
Nee, das ist F11 eigentlich, Fullscreen.
5.
Wie geht das?
Hier, Fullscreen.
View Presentation.
Ah, okay.
Where is it? Next slide. No view.
Attack ist immer gut, dann. Keine Ahnung, ich kann dir den hier anbieten. Ist das zu stressig? Ist das blöd?
Oh, slowly. Yes, ready. Well, the slide's empty.
Got an idea. Maybe this didn't copy properly. Should we copy it again on the USB stick?
Okay. Sorry for the short break.
Das stimmt doch nicht. Ja.
Willst du noch probieren? Soll ich einen anderen Speaker vorziehen?
Ja, okay.
Ja.
Aber der ist auch auf dem Sticker.
Okay, dann bräuchten wir den Sticker zumindest.
Okay. Welches ist es? Das war hier komisch, dass das nicht schon.
Oh, it's loading.
Again.
Das ist doch kaputt, oder? Hat er das schon fertig kopiert?
Ja.
Ja, ansonsten würde er eigentlich hier so einen Balken anzeigen.
Nee. Ich weiß nicht, was damit ist. Ich will ein ganz normales PDF.
Ja, vielleicht sollten wir echt den anderen erstmal vorziehen.
Dann
kommt da jetzt was?
Jetzt kommt hier wieder was, ja. Das ist das, ne?
Ja, ja.
Aber die ganze Zeit. Ich schon wieder.
Presentation.
Oh, nein, ist kaputt.
No.
Okay, nehmen wir den anderen Speaker.
Okay, then maybe we start with the other presentation.
Okay. Ziemlich andere vor, oder? Können am Schluss mal gucken.
Okay, so we just decided to do the other talks first because we have technical problems. Could be okay now? Ah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. or not? Oh, you don't do it in full screen mode, but in the other mode. Would that be okay?
I'm happy with that.
Yes? Okay.
All right, everyone. I'm Christoph Bünter. I'm a part of the Sozialhelden, which is a non-profit organization which drives social innovation in Germany. And I'm also the developer of wheelmap.org, which is an online map for wheelchair accessible places. It's based on OpenStreetMap, and it's available as a mobile web app and as a web for an app for Android and iOS as well. And as part of running WheelMap for more than 4 years now, we acquired data from all sorts of sources, like Deutsche Bank gave us an Excel file, said, here we go, we want all of our branches on your map, so can you import them now? And we said, well, yeah, we could, but it's kind of a hard work because half of them might be already in there and we got no idea how to process them. And so we stacked up all kinds of data sources, and the pressure grew for us to put them into the OpenStreetMap so they show up on the wheel map. And so we came up with the idea of PoiChecker. PoiChecker is supposed to be a tool for humans that can check if a poi is already in the OpenStreetMap or not. And people can, I mean, work much better than automated stuff. And as we're here for OpenStreetMap, we know mapping, like real mapping, is better than armchair mapping or like processing tasks like blindly. I held this talk at the Foskis in Berlin with a live demo, and I failed greatly. So this time I played it safe and made screenshots. I'll give you a quick round to how this tool works. So this is the start page. I invite everyone to go to poichecker.de/en. It's I translated it last night into English, so bear with me. It's probably heaps of spelling mistake or whatever in there. You can log in with your OpenStreetMap account right now, and you can just play around. It's not live. It doesn't write back to the OpenStreetMap, so feel free to just, you know, fiddle around and see whatever goes. But the main thing, what it's supposed to be, is we need your local knowledge. We want people to help us with areas where they have local knowledge about. So that's why we ask the person, so where's your home zone? Where do you feel comfortable? What, you know, where do you have local knowledge? So whether you can determine it with the browser or you punch in a full address. And then we confirm it on a map and say, well, let's look good. Let's start mapping. So right in there, there's more than 23,000 points to have to be checked, and they're ordered by the distance of the location you just confirmed. So there's Deutsche Bank here in Karlsruhe. It's not that far away. So we give it a shot. So this is the screen that actually needs to, you know, work on. So it shows a map with the circle, which is round about the position we think the Deutsche Bank should be. Like, it's from imported from the Excel file. It made geolocated with the Nominatim, and so we have a rough location where it's supposed to be. And then this marker is from the OpenStreetMap, and it says, well, there is a marker, and this looks like this could be something that is already in the OpenStreetMap. So let's punch it on. That's the one. So we go on the next screen, and this is a merge screen. So on the left-hand side is the information from Deutsche Bank saying this is the information we want to share with you. And on the right side, it's the information from OpenStreetMap. And then in the middle is like the result of the merging process. And they're color-coded. So in you see the street name is like red. So there's a difference between Deutsche Bank source and the OpenStreetMap source. So people can decide which one is the right one, and they punch on it. And then it turns out green because they decided the OpenStreetMap information is better than the one from the Deutsche Bank because there's the house number right in it. And then there's a wheelchair status, which is optional, but Deutsche Bank gave it to us, but it's not usable for the OpenStreetMap because it says no/9, which is no good tag value. So we fix that as well. And then we're good to go, and we save it to the OpenStreetMap. And we come right to the next poi. So people can just, you know, start helping us with the local area. And this point looks like, I mean, there is a candidate, but it looks out of space. So that's probably not the same one because address is, you know, different. So we probably want to punch it into the OpenStreetMap. So there's another screen. On the left-hand side is the information from from Deutsche Bank. In the middle is the result. On the right-hand side, we have to confirm the real position because we don't want to use the geolocated, let alone position. So, but you know, you see, there's still the street is wrong, so we fixed it. We fixed the wheelchair, and we put on the marker on the map and save it to the OpenStreetMap, and bam, there's the next one. So this is, we made it really, really easy for people to help us, you know, merge stuff into the OpenStreetMap without producing duplicate entries and even, you know, improve data quality. So yeah, that's basically it. Please give us feedback on the code is online, it's open source, it's on github.sozialhelden.projectchecker, and feel free to check it out and leave some feedback. Thanks a lot.
Okay, thanks a bunch, Christoph. Next one is Jörg Jäcke from the HORT team. Is he available? That's you? Okay.
Your slides are already on the
dir vorhin gegeben, dass du es drauf machst. Bitte? Ich dachte, ich habe es dir vorhin gegeben, dass du es drauf machst.
Ich habe noch nichts kopiert, I'm sorry.
Okay, kein Problem. Dann nicht.
Das ist PDF.
Du lass nur das als PDF. Wir haben es auf den gemacht, ne?
Vorhin.
How is it called?
I don't know anymore. Something. This one.
This one.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's try. Hope that it.
You have about 4 minutes. Four. Maximum five,
okay.
Please.
Yeah. Hello, everybody. So I'm Jorike, and I did some projects with the humanitarian OpenStreetMap team. And first of all, I'm sorry for the presentation because it's in French, but I suppose everybody speaks French because I had some difficulties with opening and finding back my English presentation. So yeah, we will see how it will. But I have a lot of pictures, so it's everything okay. So does everybody know the humanitarian OpenStreetMap team? Who doesn't know absolutely not the humanitarian OpenStreetMap team? Okay, you can come after to me. So the humanitarian OpenStreetMap team, almost everybody knows what they're more or less doing. I went for them 1 week to Lubumbashi in Congo with the Doctors Without Borders. They wanted to have in Lubumbashi, and Lubumbashi is in the center of Africa in Congo. So it's the biggest country in the middle of Africa, that part in the south. Just to have a little bit. What we already did for the humanitarian OpenStreetMap team, we already had a remote activation in the north of the country, and there is kind of beginning of creation of a local community in Kinshasa. At Lubumbashi, I was there so 1 week with the Doctors Without Borders, and we worked together with the University of Lubumbashi to really collect data on the field. And we focused on the most important data for Doctors Without Borders, and it was the street names, the neighborhood names, and really the biggest points of reference, because they wanted to have a base map to prevent an outbreak of cholera, because every year the city is, yeah, there are a lot of cases of cholera, epidemical, so they want to prevent the epidemic and to be able to locate the people on the map to see where the source of the cholera is. So the most important names of streets, names of neighborhoods, and biggest points of reference. And we did the most important work with field papers, GPSs, and of course also the smartphone with offline the OSM and the maps. Some pictures of Lubumbashi. So some streets are really good, like this, pretty big streets. They also have proper street names. It's quite easy to map these streets, but most of the streets are like this, so mud, sand, little bit houses with a lot of people on it, little houses, and these, some of the mappers we had. And the car of Doctors Without Borders like that was not a luxury. A lot of streets also haven't official street names, so it was a kind of, okay, how do we handle it? Because it's really important for the Doctors Without Borders to locate people, we really asked the people the local name. So it was not, if there was a street with no name, almost half streets haven't an official name. So it was asking to the people, how do you call this place? How do you refer to this place? And for example, this street, it's a pharmacy street. It's a street next to the pharmacy, so yes, it's a pharmacy street. We also had the brewery street, even a street named with a family. This was an important family, so okay, people call this the street next to the family Nono, so Nono Street. So in that way, people are able to locate themselves. So we use this street, so it's a local name, local use names. Also, if there are two names used, we collected these two names and put it on OpenStreetMap because it's really important to locate the people on the map to prevent. For example, this is one of the points of reference. This is a church. So it's also good to have really the local knowledge. People know to go on the field and see, okay, this is a church, we should map this. This is an important point of interest. It's not looking like our churches, but it's their church and it's an important point, so map this. It was not only local, it was also a global event, the mapping in Lubumbashi. It started here in Germany. In Berlin, there was a mapping party and they mapped almost the whole, maybe some of you were there, I don't know. Great. And there were, you mapped almost the whole street network of Lubumbashi, so it was a great start. And then we got, during this week in Lubumbashi, a whole support at distance. There were people mapping buildings from everywhere in the world. There was a mapping party in Hungary, even in the African countries, other African countries, they were mapping for us, organizing mapping parties. This is a picture, the left one is from Burkina Faso, the right one is from Togo, I think. So it was great to see all this support, to have all this support. Probably some of you also mapped for us at that time. And then, at the end, there was the, because we worked with field papers, we also had the field papers with a lot of data, but we haven't had the time there and the possibility to map all this data. So the another important part was after this week to digitize these field papers. After we organized in London a mapping party to digitize these field papers, and maybe some of you were there too. So it was great to see all this global dynamism around this Lubumbashi project, and the mappers on the field are still going to map, and it's great to see this dynamism. So this little story I wanted to share with you. If you have questions, you can always come to me after, or I will be here the whole day, maybe tomorrow. So, thanks.
Okay, thanks, Jacob. The time has progressed, and I'm sorry for the mess about the organization and the technical issues we had. We have time for one last lightning talk. So talk, I think we cannot do this, but the last one is Sven Jonas Schellhorn. Is he available? Okay.
Can I start from here?
All right. Hello, everybody. I'm trying to be very quick and specific so we can have the lunch quickly then. My name is Sven Jonas. I'm a master's student at the Heidelberg Geography Department. And I would like to introduce very quickly an initiative which we launched a couple of months ago, and it's very nice that Jerika told us a little bit about the humanitarian OpenStreetMap team, because this is very close to our work, so it is a very nice entry point. I would like to go back a couple of months to late 2013. Maybe some of you, or I think all of you, remember the Typhoon Haiyan, which hit the Philippines, and there was a massive effort by volunteers worldwide to contribute to the humanitarian efforts during the typhoon and after. So the official agencies, United Nations organizations, the American Red Cross and several others were working closely together with the humanitarian OpenStreetMap team and also the Standby Task Force, which is a global community who is doing social media monitoring in disaster situations. And what you see here is that the products or that the efforts by the global mapping community of OpenStreetMap were actually really used in the field on the Philippines. So 8 agencies were using base maps based on OpenStreetMaps to get a better situational awareness what's really going on the ground. And this is a very nice example of how OpenStreetMap can do a real like meaningful contribution to humanitarian work. Here's a quick example of a view on Tacloban, a city on the Philippines which were really hit very seriously by the typhoon. And this is a picture before the typhoon and after, and you see it was very vastly mapped in a very couple of days, and it was a very rich detail after that. And in the whole, it were over 1,500 mapping volunteers in 3 days, and they were mapping over 4,700,000 map changes. And in Heidelberg, that's why I'm talking about this, we tried to make our contribution to that at the Department of GIS Science. For example, Pascal Nice, he's a very experienced OpenStreetMap contributor, and he was also doing a lot of research on that. He was setting up a service which made it possible to track map changes, and the volunteers could look how much was done already and where and who mapped. And another service which was set up was a base map with OpenStreetMaps, which showed specific elements at risk, for example, gas stations, or schools, or hospitals. And also, you see here on the right side that there was another layer which showed feeds from Flickr images. So it was possible with this service to match the OpenStreetMap component with social media data. What else did we do? So we did a lot of mapathons. We included this into the lectures for GIS students. And we were also organizing mapping lunches. We call it munch. So the students could have a lunch while mapping. And what we want to do now is that we want to make it more sustainable. So as an outlook, what we want to do with this initiative, we want to globalize the community, because we saw it is very good when you can benefit from face-to-face communications while doing this mapping, but it's also important to have the connection to the global mapping community, and this is what we call glocalization. We want link practice and research further. We want to bring the mapping experiences into the lectures, and we want to conserve and multiply knowledge and skills about mapping, about the tools we use, So if you're further interested in our initiative and if you would like to start or you already have several similar initiatives at your universities or in your local communities, it would be very great to team up and to benefit from each other. And that's it. Thank you very much for your attention.